Welcome to the Space Show, Siv.
It's a pleasure to be here, Andrew.
What would the discovery of a fossil life on Mars do to hope of success in the SETI searches?
Well, you know, there is the claim already, of course, that there's fossilized remains of Martians to be found in this Martian meteorite, ALH84001, that was picked out of the Antarctic ice in 1984. This discovery was announced, I think, about 2 years ago, and since then, the people that have done it, mostly NASA scientists, have claimed that they've also found fossils, Martian fossils, little frozen little Martians, in a couple of other meteorites known to come from Mars. Now, if true, this would prove that there was life on Mars. And in fact, if the recent finds are true, it would probably indicate that there's still life on Mars. But whether the life is still on Mars or not, the important thing from my point of view would be that it would show that life is very common. You mean if life springs up in a couple of planets that are right next to one another, like Mars and the Earth, then it must be life all over the place. That biology is not, a miracle, not a local phenomenon. Biology is as common as a cheap hotel. It's all over the place.
Of course, there's a big step up from microbial life up to large plants, large animals, and even a bigger step up to intelligent life, isn't there?
There is, in fact, and that's really an important point. Many people are probably of the opinion that, once you get life started, that's the difficult thing to do, and then you just sit around for 3.5 billion years, and pretty soon you have critters that are smart enough, like we are, to build radio transmitters, get on the air, and then other SETI researchers throughout the galaxy can pick them up. But that's not at all clear. I mean, more complicated life forms, I don't think that's so unexpected, although, on Earth, most of the history of life on this planet is the history of bacteria and other single-celled creatures. So it took a long time to get anything more complicated going, but even that may not be so unlikely. What may be very unlikely, however, is producing intelligent life. I mean, one has to admit that. As an example, if the asteroid that wiped out the dinosaurs 65 million years ago had arrived at Earth 20 minutes earlier, we wouldn't be having this conversation because there would be dinosaurs here in Melbourne instead of humans. So, maybe humans are a very unlikely evolutionary development. Intelligence may be fairly unlikely. That's a pretty contentious issue. Nobody's quite sure what the answer is, and there are people that feel very strongly one way or the other. If it's true, if there's a lot of life in the galaxy, but it's all stupid life, then obviously we're not going to hear anything on our radio transmitters unless whatever intelligent life there is has managed to spread out a little bit and, move its transmitters, as it were, offshore and to places where we might hear them.
The recent discovery of extrasolar planets must have given you a bit of a boost in confidence that you might actually have planets out there on which life could form.
Yeah, this is also another encouraging sign for SETI, in much the way that the Martian microfossils were. I mean, we'd always assumed that planets were a dime a dozen, that they were very common, but nobody really knew that for sure. And now, of course, we know that at least a few percent of all the stars that are looked at have planets. So that means that there are at least a few billion planetary systems in our galaxy, and that's a fairly large number right there. So it is encouraging to know that ET has a home to phone, yes.
Of course, the planets that have been found so far have been gas giant planets. Are you confident that in association with them there will be smaller rocky planets, presumably the sort of planet in which life would have to be existing?
Yes, it's been somewhat dismaying that the planets that have been found are, as you say, these sort of what are called hot Jupiters, big giant planets presumably covered with methane and ammonia and other things that are more suitable for cleaning the bathroom than for living in, very close into their suns. These are toasty planets that are really not very interesting for life. But remember that the experiments that are being run are very strong filters. They find these kinds of planets that are large, planets that are close into their suns, and the small rocky planets that you've just spoken of couldn't be found with these experiments. And the question is, do they exist? And we don't know, but it isn't ruled out so far by these observations. Some of the planetary systems that have been found are large planets that aren't so close into their suns, so maybe they're more like our own solar system. And if you're of the optimistic bent, you might remember that some of the gas giant planets in our own solar systems have moons, such as Jupiter's moons, Europa, Callisto, and so forth, that themselves may be homes for life. So maybe just a big planet may not be the end of the story. Big planets might have small moons.
Now, you're not going to get life on planets devoid of the elements like carbon and oxygen, and yet the early universe was devoid of these elements. How are the heavy elements made?
Well, heavy elements are probably everything heavier than helium is considered a heavy element to an astronomer. And the Big Bang, of course, cooked up only hydrogen and helium. Good news for dirigible makers, perhaps, but none of the sorts of things that would be useful for making up life. Those were all cooked up in stars, everything up to iron, actually. Things that are heavier than iron were made in massive stellar explosions called supernovae. But the stuff that's really requisite for life, the stuff that you need, like carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, sulfur, those sorts of things, those are cooked up in stars. Then the stars die. They blow up part of themselves out into space. They sort of belch their innards into space, and then that stuff is recycled in new stars and planets. So what that means is that when the universe was very young, of course, you didn't have much of this stuff around because it hadn't been made yet, it hadn't been recycled yet. So that may mean that life couldn't get started in the very early days of our galaxy. But, you know, how early is very early days? And that's somewhat contentious, but probably you can throw out the first couple of billion years, but the galaxy's been around for maybe 10, 12 billion years. So, you know, you're not losing a lot here. I think that life could be found around most of the stars that we know of in our galaxy. Not all, the very oldest, maybe not. But I don't think that this is a serious problem. I don't think that we're going to fail to find life because it wasn't the raw material.
And would the material be spread out evenly throughout the galaxy, or do the observations show that there's some areas we're more rich in these secondary elements and others are rather devoid of them?
Well, there's certainly an abundance gradient, as it's called. There is a change of the composition of stars depending on where you are in the galaxy. I mean, the central regions of the galaxy tend to be sort of deficient in these heavy elements that you really want for life compared to the region where we are. So it may be that there are some neighborhoods that aren't as suitable for life as others, in the same way that there, you know, there's real estate here in Australia that's better for life than other parts of the continent. I don't see this as a terribly strong effect, to be honest, because it's not quite clear how impoverished a stellar neighborhood needs to be before you really can't have any life. Maybe there isn't such a thing. So in the same way that you really have life all throughout Australia, despite the fact that large sections of it are fairly dry and desert like, maybe in the galaxy you have life throughout most of it as well. We certainly haven't skewed our observations very much when we're searching for aliens toward those parts of the galaxy which are, as it were, heavy element rich. So we haven't biased our search in any way.
We've already mentioned the disappearance of the dinosaurs, and the possibility that on Mars life once existed but has now been wiped out. Do you think it's quite likely that throughout the universe life may evolve and then die out on any particular planet, perhaps die out before intelligent life can evolve?
Well, I do think that I suspect that there are many planets, undoubtedly the majority of planets, that have life, don't have intelligent life, but I don't think it's because the intelligence has died out. That's just a fairly popular point of view, actually, or at least it was for the last 20 years, that, you know, you invent radio, which makes you now intelligent by our definition, because that means we can pick you up with our radio telescopes. And the moment that you become smart enough to build a transmitter, you also invent the hydrogen bomb. I mean, that all happens within 50 years of one another. And so you're on the air for a couple of hundred years, and then bam, there's a big mushroom cloud all over the place, and that's it. You're off the air. And presumably that's happened to E.T. as well, so we're not going to hear him because he's never on the air long enough. I think that's a fairly, that's a bit of a bummer. That's a bit of a downer, and I think it's unrealistic as well, because we ourselves are going to spread out fairly soon. We'll be having colonies on the moon, on Mars, maybe, in big rotating cylinders in space. We'll probably colonize the asteroids in the next couple of hundred years. So that means that if we can just survive for a few hundred years without doing ourselves in, that we'll be spread out around the solar system. That means it may be very hard to get rid of ourselves at that point. And I suspect the same thing has happened with the aliens. So I don't expect that intelligence, once it gets started, often self-destructs.
Could we advance our understanding of extraterrestrial life by doing laboratory experiments here on Earth? For example, has anyone ever made artificial life on Earth?
Well, I think that some of my colleagues feel that I am one of those experiments, actually. No, I don't think that we... No, I mean, obviously, we haven't made artificial life here on Earth yet. It's almost a scary thought to think that we may do so within the next decade or two. There are people who think that that's likely. That's a whole other subject, of course. But it's true that we don't know very well how life got started on Earth. In fact, we don't know how it got started on Earth. And that inhibits our ability to say whether life would get started on other planets. But, you know, you can short-circuit all that, even though you don't understand how it got started on Earth. If you find life, you know, compelling evidence for life on Mars or under the icy crust of Jupiter's moon Europa or some other place nearby, then even though you don't know how it got started, you can say with some confidence that it's going to happen often.
Now, you've published a book recently. What's it called?
The book is called Sharing the Universe, Perspectives on Extraterrestrial Life.
And it covers this sort of topic, doesn't it?
It does, actually. It talks about where life might have cooked up, what the probability is that it's done so, how we might find it, and what that would mean to our day-to-day life if we were to hear the aliens.
And this is an approachable and readable book?
It is. This book is intended for the general public, so it's not a technical book. It's intended to be interesting for just about anybody.
And how can people get hold of it?
Well, it's fairly easy to find the book. You just go down to your local book publisher. It's published here in Australia by Lansdowne Publishing, but it's called Sharing the Universe, and just ask your local bookseller to get the book for you if they don't have it in stock.
Well, thank you for joining us tonight on The Space Show, Seth.
I've really enjoyed being here, Andrew.
Thank you.